And my guest tonight is Paul Stamets. We're talking, he is a mycologist. We're talking about the many different functions of mushrooms, over 14,000 species of mushrooms that do all sorts of different things, including it protect our environment, our biosphere. It can be used as pest control, as Paul was just talking about, to save the bees. We're going to talk about that. But they also provide medicine and antibiotics, and a particular one called the turkey tail mushroom has been backed up with scientific studies that actually show that it could boost immunity during chemotherapy. There are many different studies on so many different, the Department of Defense uses mushrooms to clean up oil spills. So there's a lot more coming up here. We're going to take your call soon as well. So we will be right back. This is Lisa Garr. You're listening to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. My guest is mycologist Paul Stamets, and we're talking about the wonderful properties of mushrooms and the healing properties of mushrooms. I know that you're working on a current project here about saving the bees from colony collapse disorder. Paul, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, all of my inventions have stories behind them. So my story really begins in 1984. I had two beehives on my property here. I live out in the country. And I put a garden giant mushroom in my garden. It's mycelium, a little patch of wood chips, about 12 inches deep. And I go out in the summertime and then one day, and I notice all these bees on top of my mycelium, and they move these wood chips around, which would be like us moving a semi-truck.
Wow. You
know? They're really big wood chips. And I looked really closely, and there's about 50 bees, and they were nipping on the mycelium. And I thought they were getting the sweet polysaccharides, the sweet sugars. And for 40 days, I actually wrote this down. For 40 days, there was a convoy of bees going to my mushroom patch, several hundred feet, all day long from dawn to dusk. And I made note of this. And what's weird about it is they sucked the myceliums down so it collapsed from 12 inches to about 3 inches in depth. And I made a note of this, and I put it in one of my books, and Harrow Smith magazine had an article on it. And virtually everybody ignored me except for a beekeeper in Ontario who wrote, well, maybe that's why bees go to sawdust piles. Okay, so that's, I'm going to tell you like four little stories in a row here, and that's how this idea got strung together. And then I'm hiking in the Olympic Mountains, and I go around a bend in the trail, and we see a bear scratch. A bear went up to a tree and bam, scratched the tree. And it oozes with resin. Well, it turns out that bees go after resins where bears scratch. They go after young, where bears scratch fir trees and birch trees. That's where the bees like to go. And they get the resin and they make propolis, and that patches the holes in their hives where they're living. So that was interesting. And the logging industry hired hunters. They killed hundreds, thousands of bears because the timber industry was thought that bears were causing an infection of a polypore mushroom on the tree. And indeed, that's true. But typical of humans, we're so misguided because it turns out that bears were bringing salmon carcasses on the banks and a returned sea phosphorus, which is a limiting mineral. If the trees don't have it, the trees don't grow big. So actually, bears were helping the trees grow. So there's that event. And then colony collapse disorder. There, Louis Schwartzberg is a friend of mine. He's making a movie on my work, and he's done a lot of things for Walt Disney and National Geographic. And he said, you know, knew of my work with insects, and said, Paul, what can you do to help the bees? And I went, wow, I had this very strange experience, you know, in my garden, and that rekindled the interest. And then a series of articles came out, and what's really interesting, colony collapse disorder is a syndrome. And many people listening know about it, but there's multiple factors. One is deforestation, and you know, one is monoculture because they kill all the weeds and all the brush, and they put in one crop. And then there's a confluence, unfortunately, of lots of xenobiotic or anthropogenic, you know, toxins, human-made toxins, and then there's the introduction of mites. The mites came, the Varroa mites came to the United States around 1987, and the mites vector a virus and several viruses. And so you have this domino effect It's like, imagine we only have 10% of the forest debris on the ground, and farming now has wiped out the forests. The bees now don't have the menu that they had before. And then an article came out showing that bees that do not have the bees that have collapsed, the honey lacked a fungal compound called turmeric acid. It's a polyphenol. And the honey in the hives where the hives collapsed lacked this essential compound. Now, why that's important is that turmeric acid activates what's called the cytochrome P450 pathway. It's not that complicated, really. What that means, and we have it, all animals use this pathway to detoxify toxins. We have it primarily in our liver, and that's how we can eat, toxins, and then we can break them down. Well, it turns out without that turmeric acid, the cytochrome P450 pathway is turned off in bees. So they're hyperaccumulating these toxins because they don't have this fungal compound that comes from the fungi decomposing wood.
That was in the scratched wood from the bears.
Exactly.
Ah.
And so the story gets even stranger because I work with a BioShield program of the U.S. Defense Department, and I found these polypore mushrooms are highly antiviral. There's a press release that was vetted by DOD. We had the best results of more than 2 million samples that were submitted, and there are natural products of our mycelial extracts from the polypore mushrooms. And so I knew that these polypore mushrooms were active against viruses that harm humans. So I went to several universities, and when I went to Washington State University, they said, stop, don't go anywhere else. And Dr. Steve Shepard, who is the chief of entomology at WSU, we did the experiments now for the past year and 3 months now, and he is amazed, and we're amazed, everyone's surprised, but he gave a great quote that is out there now that says, in 39 years of research, he's never seen anything like this that can help the life, extend the lifespan
of the bees,
and is so antiviral. And so what we found now is by using our extracts and putting it into the sugar water, that it diminishes the viruses. The mites are vectoring viruses. And so what happens with colony collapse disorder, and it's so bizarre, I just met a beekeeper who lost 50 out of 50 hives this spring.
My goodness.
Colony collapse disorder is really bad this year.
Yes.
It wasn't so bad last year, but this year is really, really bad. And 70% of our food is indirectly coming from bee pollination. 30% is direct. So
it
this
threatens
is
the food supply.
Food security issue.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Huge.
Why do you think it's so bad this year?
Well, that's a really good question. There are our circadian cycles, and it just could be a cyclic thing. We don't know, but it's cyclically getting worse. And this is what the trend lines are showing.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is that the most bees live for about 30 days. But when you see bees out pollinating flowers, that's at the end of their lifespan. They flap their wings until they're shredded, but they're bringing back pollen and propolis and back to the hive. And when there are nurse bees that are taking care of the young brood, and then if the workers don't come back, the nurse bees are prematurely recruited to become worker bees, and they go out and fly to get more pollen.
Mm-hmm.
So they abandon the brood.
Mm.
Well, the brood has mites, and if their nurse bees are not there taking care of them, the mites are injecting viruses into the brood. And so then suddenly what happens with colony collapse disorder that's so frightening is there's no bees at all. You go out to your beehive from one day to the next or 2 days later, and thousands of bees have disappeared, but there's no bees in the hive. They're gone.
Where did they go? They're dying or they're...
They get disoriented. They have viruses. They have all these pesticides.
So how could
neonicotinoids are a big factor here, and all the fungicides that they're using, all the herbicides, they don't have the cytochrome P450 pathway activated.
There was over, I guess, 60 different contributing factors to the bees collapsing in the.
Yeah, it's a very, very complex scenario.
There's a lot of them.
Mm-hmm. It's a perfect storm. Of very terrible things. And it's really interesting. There was a survey, and protecting bees is has the greatest commonality of interest between the people on the far left and the far right. It's a unifying concept.
Well, so is the environment.
In the environment. But this really strikes home because food security is really important. And I believe that biodiversity is biosecurity. And I think that's something that we need to monetize somehow. And so
Yes,
we
trees,
are now going
flowers.
into hundreds of hives. We have now proved this now at several laboratories. We had randomized samples, and we can show that we can reduce the viruses in the bees dramatically. And this is the very strange thing about this. Now think of these polypore mushrooms. These are hard wood conchs that grow on trees. Everybody's seen them. They're hoof shaped. They're not
Right.
soft mushrooms. They're really tough. But think of this. These mushrooms, these polypore mushrooms, reduce viruses that harm humans, like H5N1, H3N2, H1N flu viruses,
Really?
Pox viruses, and hepatitis, reduces viruses that harm pigs. Well, H1N1
Wow.
is a flu virus for the pigs. Harms viruses, reduces viruses that harms birds, that harms bats, that harms bees.
The mushroom eats these viruses like West Nile and
Well, we
H1N?
haven't had any activity in West Nile, but we've had we have 8 viruses that we've identified where there's a dramatic reduction. So if this is true, and I think it is, I think this is a key insight to something that is fundamental to the foundation of nature. We were forest people for millions of years. And it may be that the mushroom mycelium is governing the immunological health of the residents that are walking upon it. And then if you are a responsible citizen in your ecosystem, then it
Mm-hmm.
helps you govern your health. And if you're irresponsible, then disease vectors spring forth. And the rule of nature is when an organism exceeds the carrying capacity of its ecosystem, what happens? Diseases proliferate.
Right,
So
right.
I think this is something that's really paradigm shifting in an
It
interesting
all is,
insight.
though, Paul. Everything you've mentioned, from cleaning up toxic waste to nuclear waste to pest control and saving the bees and now the antibiotics and so forth. I mean, you mentioned that somebody is doing a movie on your work, and there was a recent Kickstarter campaign on it, right?
Yeah, it's called Fantastic Fungi by Louis Schwartzberg. The target was $100,000 in 30 days, and we got $135,000. And it's there's a great 2-minute clip. I think it's up on your website now, called Fantastic Fungi. It's 2 minutes and 20 seconds long, but it's a feel-good clip.
Now,
great slow motion.
Let me just ask you, I mean, you have so many different inventions and patents pending and really solutions to saving the world. How do you focus? I mean, each one of these could be.
Well, I have a wonderful team, and there's a lot of small business people out there in the audience, and I want to just give my respect to them and tell you what I did. I got accepted into 4 graduate schools, but I married a woman who was 11 years older than me when I was 22, and I had 3 teenage kids from that marriage, one of them that was 17, but I had several martial arts schools on my other side of my life. I have 2 black belts, and I had martial arts schools for about 20, 30 years, so I put the kids in my martial arts schools, they behaved. But I couldn't go to graduate school. I couldn't afford to move this family that I had adopted. So I started this little mail order business specifically to get laboratory equipment so I could do my research. And I wanted to get it wholesale. So I literally packed 30,000 boxes before I had a single employee. And I answered the phones, oftentimes with a baby on my back, because I then had 2 other children. And I remember 1 or 2 times having to catch the child. I was leaning over packing boxes. Whoops. Sorry about that. Then I built up a small company, and now we have 65 employees. We're totally independent. We have no investors. We are now virtually debt-free. And so I created this business in order to have a vehicle for doing research. And I've got a core team here, who are totally realize that we're on a mission that's so much more important than ourselves. We can create, I think, and keys to new doors through which future generations can walk through that can have a dramatically positive effect. It's an all hands on deck moment. And the fact that there's so much mycophobia and misunderstanding of these fungi, and they're so important for the very food webs that we depend upon, speaks to our ignorance. We are Neanderthals with nuclear weapons. And I really sense that downstream generations are calling back in time, saying, wake up, don't you see? This is so important.
But I know that you also have the interests of celebrities that we can't necessarily name here. But how come you can't get investment money from them to develop some of these things that are incredibly important?
Well, number one, I refuse to give up control. I've had several billionaires literally fly in. One of the co-founders of AOL flew in one of his jets, you know. And one of the things they want is to wrestle control. Once you lose more than 20% of your company, note, folks, more than 20% of your company, the banks will not loan you money. And the investors then, the vulture capitalists, hijack and take over your company because the banks will require them to do a co-signing on any loan or line of credit. You can't exist in a business without a line of credit. The investor will say no, and then they got you. And so I refuse to give up control. And so one of the big, I will, you know, I do have investors coming to me all the time, but I said, you're not going to like what I'm going to tell you. This is a deal breaker. I refuse to go. I want undilutable control, and you cannot have more than you have to have less than 20%.
There's different ways to do it, though, when you really are holding the key to something that could make a course correction in the evolution of this planet. There are many different ways of doing business.
There are, but we have a little company and at fungi.com, and we are financing our own research in order to remain independent so we can be true to our values and so we can take this to market.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want this to be quashed. And with the pesticide inventions that we have, that's what these companies will do. They could buy a license and then crush it so it won't get to market. So this is a slow process. That's why we're a turtle around my neck. You know, I'm methodical and I have stamina, but it's going to the slower path is a truer path, ultimately, that'll benefit more people than going for the fast buck. And I have to maintain control because I just don't trust these people.
Well,
sorry.
let's talk about something else then. We've got let's talk about the turkey tail mushroom, because that one has properties that anybody could basically get. I understand that oncologists are now, and a listener had emailed in about oncologists are recommending people who are on chemo drugs to take turkey tail. Do you know anything about that?
I know a little bit. Turkey tail mushrooms, for listeners, are a bracket fungus. They're multicolored, and they're on dead trees, and everyone's seen them. You know, just go outside, look for some down trees, and you'll see them. And turkey tail mushrooms are the best, well-studied medicinal mushroom in the world. We received a National Institutes of Health grant for $2.2 million for a breast cancer clinical study. I was one of the co-principal investigators through the University of Minnesota Medical School and Bastyr Medical College in Seattle. We received the grant, but I was a co-investigator, and they said, well, Paul, where should you get their mushrooms? And I said, well, you should get them from us, because I grow these things. I know the process intimately, and there's so many problems from mushrooms from overseas, et cetera. You need to know what's called the chain of custody. You need to be able to audit the entire production trail. And they said, well, you can't be a co-investigator and a supplier, so choose one. And I resigned then and became a supplier. Then we were juried with five other companies, and our product was chosen, thankfully, because of the assays that they did. And this breast cancer clinical study has been published in 2012, showing a tremendous increase in the immune system post-chemotherapy and radiation therapy, or in conjunction with chemotherapy. But this really, really hit home as part of my TEDMED talk, for those people who want to listen to it. And also at Stanford Medical School in November, I gave a talk at Exponential Medicine, part of Singularity University. And my 83-year-old mother called me up soon after we got this grant, and she's a charismatic Christian. She has not seen a doctor since 1968. And she called me up, and I couldn't even know who it was. She was crying and crying, and my mother's a very happy woman. I said, Mom, what's wrong? And she was shaking, crying, and said, Paul, I want to talk to you about something, but you're always so busy. And I said, well, Mom, what's wrong? And she goes, my right breast is 5 times the size of my left. I have 6 angry lymph nodes on my right side. And she said, I'm scared. And so I rushed her to this Swedish cancer clinic in Seattle, at Swedish hospital. Mm-hmm. And upon the second visit, the oncologist, you know, gave us the worst news. She says the second worst case of breast cancer she's seen in 20 years. The tumor was erupting through her breast, across the meridian, went into her sternum and her liver.
Wow.
And she was too old to have radiation therapy, and she couldn't have surgery because she could get an infection.
We're going to have to find out the positive side of the story in just a minute. I hate to interrupt you, Paul, but we have to take a quick break. There's a good ending, though. So you can also watch his TEDMED talk online as well. It's quite moving. You can take a look at that. We will be right back. This is Lisa Gar. You're listening to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. My guest is mycologist Paul Stamets. We're talking about how mushroom and mycelium can really change the course of evolution on this planet. And Paul has stated many different ways that that could happen, from cleaning up nuclear waste to pest control and saving the bees and providing medicine and antibiotics and boosting immunity. He said that we have three more mushrooms to discuss. So hold on for this, because I'm sure that if Paul wants to talk about them, they have some pretty incredible properties. So stick with us. We will be taking your calls in a little bit as well. I will be back in a few minutes. Welcome back to Coast AM. My guest is mycologist Paul Stamets. Before the break, you were talking about a very moving story about your mother who discovered that she had breast cancer. Can you continue on that story?
Yeah, she had advanced stage 4 breast cancer. She was given less than 3 months to live. You know, we had the circle meeting that many listeners have gone through, and she chose a pine casket, the cheapest one that she could find, because she was going on to Jesus, and she bought a pink dress, and we chose the hymns for her funeral, and, you know, a lot of tears and crying because there's nothing they could do for her. Now, they put her on Taxol briefly. She had a very bad reaction, and then she was put on a wonderful drug called Herceptin, and then she started taking 8 turkey tail capsules per day. And just what was interesting was my mother, upon the third visit, you know, when the doctor gave us, you know, the worst news that we could hear, that she only had a few months to live at most, and that she should have been treated more than 2 years ago, if there was any hope. And the doctor then said, well, the interesting clinical study by NIH on turkey tail mushrooms for supporting the immune system of breast cancer patients.
Wow.
And that's why my mother said, well, my son is growing those, and he is supplying those. And so she had to hear it from a doctor.
Wow.
You know, classic parent, you know, child in her relationship. So she started, she was put on Herceptin, and she started taking turkey tail mushrooms, and that was in January of June of 2009. And by January, her tumors had radically declined. And 3-4 months ago, she passed the 5-year disease-free survival.
Oh,
she
has
no detectable tumors whatsoever.
Wow.
She's been written up in several medical journals. Now turkey tail mushrooms have been found to enhance the activity of the chemotherapeutic drugs, such as Herceptin. And this could be a game changer, because what happens when a lot of people who get cancer, when they're younger, their immune systems are intact, but the tumors cloak themselves from immune discovery. Your immune system cannot find receptor sites or docking points to lock and load against the tumors. And putatively, working with Fred Hutch Med School in Seattle, what they propose is that these mushrooms seem to not only activate an immune response by increasing your natural killer cells and your cytotoxic T cells, but also appears to decloak, unmask the tumors for immune discovery. And this is really, really important.
That's huge, yes.
Yeah, and because a lot of us have an active immune system, even if you have cancer, and we all have cancer all the time. It's just, you know, nature's a numbers game. How many coefficients on this side of the equation can multiply together will result in you being healthy or not? And we're all in this dance of these variables. And so
now, are those available in the U.S., the turkey tail mushrooms?
Yes, they are.
They are?
Yes, and we have a product line, but I don't want to pitch a product on the radio. But make sure that your turkey tail mushrooms are certified organic. That's really important.
I didn't know that they were available in the U.S. I didn't think that they could be imported, but they can now.
No, we grow tons of it. Tons of it.
And grow them here. I see.
Yeah, we grow them here. We have a product line called Host Defense. This is in every Whole Foods and Vitamin Shoppe, et cetera. So, it's available, but we are allowed to say it supports the immune system, So, you know, we cannot make any claim saying that this will cure cancer. I'm not saying that. I'm saying it's a factor that augments immune support. And insofar as immune support can be helpful, you know, these mushrooms have been proven to be that. So,
Now, you mentioned that there was three other mushrooms that I haven't even discovered yet. Talking about
well,
what are
I
those?
love lion's mane. Lion's mane, it looks like a pom-poms of cheerleaders, you know. It's a white mushroom. It has cascading long spines. They grow on hardwood trees. And lion's mane may be the first smart mushroom that and what lion's mane has is two molecules that are not found anywhere else in nature. And they cause remyelination, the regrowth of myelin on the axons of nerves. And unfortunately, we all will suffer some form of neuropathy. And with Alzheimer's patients in particular, there's a demyelination. This is the sheath that transmits the signals on the outer skin, so to speak, of your nerves. And when demyelination, when that sheath is disrupted, then with Alzheimer's patients in particular, the amyloid plaque is forms. And so if you have a loved one who dies from, you think it's Alzheimer's, upon autopsy, they can see the amyloid plaque. Now, Dr. Kawaguchi in 1994 in Japan, he gets credit for this discovery. I have no idea how he came up with this, but it's the strongest nerve growth factor. At one point, it was described the strongest one ever discovered that causes remyelination. There's been three or four clinical studies specifically on this mushroom, one more recently. I have written 10 articles for the Huffington Post. So you can Google my name, Stamets, and mushrooms in the Huffington Post. You can read the articles. They all go through peer review, pass a panel of doctors, so they're very, very credible. But there's two experiments that are just fun to talk about, and these
About
are
the
mu
lion's mane
about
mushrooms?
the lion's mane mushroom. And this is with mice, but it's very transferable to humans. And what they did is they took mice and they put them in a little arena, and they put a new an object inside of the arena. So the mice would go up and sniff it, and they had stopwatches and counters, and they counted how many times and how long they would sniff at a new object. So they got a new toy in an arena, they got really excited, and they sniffed it. Okay, so they got a good baseline, hundreds and hundreds of data points. And then they injected this polypeptide that induced demyelination, that caused amyloid plaque. And then as their disease progressed, you know, you put a new object in the middle of the maze, no, the arena, no interest at
No
all.
interest.
Now, when they gave them lion's mane mushrooms, those mice that were fully afflicted and ill, after about 20 to 30 days, they regained the interest in the object, regained novelty and imagination, and upon dissection, they found that the majority of the amyloid plaque had been removed, and the remyelination occurred. Now, another study they did
Now, does
was.
that mean that it made the nerves more resistant to illness?
It means the nerves regenerated. These are called
Regenerated. Wow.
neuroregenerative compounds, nerve growth factors. I think this is the
Nerve
first.
growth.
Yeah,
Wow.
this is a. I think this is one of the first smart mushrooms.
In
And
what
probably
form
should.
does it come, lion's mane mushroom?
Well, you can buy it in capsules,
Ah,
but you can buy them in the stores on the West Coast. It's
that's
really hard to
huge.
find. You know, we, you know, we, of course, you know, we have we we're in the biz, so to speak. And the other test was a white choice test, and similar test, except that they went down a corridor. They had a left corridor and a right corridor. The left corridor went to food, the right one did not. Well, the normal mice immediately figured out, or very, very quickly, you go left to get food. When they injected the amyloid plaque-causing polypeptide, as the disease progressed, they then randomized. They came up to the fork, and they didn't know which way to go. Well, that is a sign of dementia. And then they did the same thing. They introduced the lion's mane mushroom to the diet of these mice, and they then, after 3 or 4 weeks, were able to regain the ability to remember which way to go. So I think this is a game changer.
How many do you think you would need to take the lion's mane capsules?
Well, there's about 5% of their body weight was being consumed over a period of time, and my articles mention specifically how much was being consumed, and I have all the references in there.
So if you were to take capsules, what would you think if you were to?
Well, we've been working with Emory Medical School, and we sent them 8 or 9 strains of lion's mane mushrooms because these compounds vary between different strains, just like the different strains of tomatoes. There are different strains of lion's mane mushrooms, and so we found some strains had nothing, and some strains had a whole bunch. And so the variability of strains is really, really important. So we are very interested in conducting clinical studies on this. These are all off patent. There's no patents on this because they're called grass, generally regarded as safe. Now, the founder of Western medicine, Dioscorides, had the famous quote, "Let thy food be thy medicine." And now we've entered into a new category where we have medicinal foods. We have pharmaceutical foods. These are foods that have a pharmacological effect.
Yes, back to thank you. That's great. That is a great term.
Yeah, and so I think that we've entered into a new arena. Now, this is contrary to the pharmaceutical industry's best interests.
Well,
They can't capture this, and there's been a multi-thousand-year history of use of lion's mane mushrooms. And so, I personally take them every day in a capsule form. And
preventatively,
pardon?
preventatively.
Preventive. I think yeah. We all.
Preventatively.
This is the tragedy of age, is we have elders with encyclopedic knowledge, and they can't access their encyclopedias. They've had
Good
this.
point.
All this intellectual knowledge, all this experiential knowledge,
Right.
and they can't pass it down.
We're gonna go to callers here. We've got a caller from our wild card line here in Santa Clara, California. Edward, do you have a question for Paul Stamets?
Yes, is there a mushroom that can help people with type 2 diabetes, or maybe there's a mushroom that can also help people with type 1 diabetes?
Great question. Paul?
These mushrooms, in their form that you buy them in the grocery store, are really high in fibers, and they have compounds that can, and they're very high in complex arrays of sugars, not simple sugars, but complex sugars. And so there are some studies out specifically on using a variety of mushrooms to help normalize the sugar pathways in diabetic patients. If you go to PubMed and you specifically Google or the search engine, either through PubMed or Google Scholar Alerts, you can find those articles. One of them just came out about 3 weeks ago. That is really very, very interesting. And so, the answer to the question is there is preliminary research that looks like these mushrooms are very, very helpful.
Which ones again, Paul, for
Well,
diabetes?
I'd have to give me a second or two, and I can my you know it's my brain is not fully functioning here, but
No,
I can certainly find it in the next few seconds or so.
that's fine because it is late where you are, and we appreciate you're doing a great job, by the way. That would be great. Maybe during the break you can find out which one those are. But thank you for your phone call. I appreciate it. Edward, so we could go to east of the Rockies, Sulphur Springs, Texas. Victor, do you have a comment or a question for Paul Stamets?
Yes. Hello, Lisa. Hello, Paul.
Hi.
I can I almost died from COPD back in 2003, and matter of fact, it is right around Paul's neighborhood. It is in Gig Harbor, Washington. I lived there since '62,
Huh.
and I was wondering what kind of mushroom compounds would be good for COPD.
I don't have any information on that, and when I don't know, I tell people I don't know. So, I'm sorry that you have this condition, but I don't have any information on COPD.
But what about boosting immune system? Would that help?
Well, immune system decline is the root cause of many disease complexes that can be exacerbated because of other causes. Again, nature and health is a numbers game. So the more you can do to improve baseline immunity will help your body's general general system to be able to operate more effectively. But I don't have any specific information on
that. Well, also when you talked about nerve growth, I mean, it could also help. This COPD, is it a lung disorder or pulmonary disorder?
Yes, it can be.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are mushrooms that help respiratory function.
There is. And
cordyceps and reishi are two mushrooms that they found that help the absorption of oxygen through the lungs. And there's famous, legendary stories about both of those used by Himalayan guides in order to fight altitude illness by making tea of cordyceps and tea of reishi mushrooms. But I don't know of any COPD studies per se.
And speaking of those mushrooms, by the way, and thank you for your call, Victor, those mushrooms, they oxygenate the blood. Is that the reason that they help with altitude and so forth?
That's exactly what they do. They open up the alveoli in order to absorb more oxygen, and cordyceps is a vasodilator. And so reishi increases the absorption of oxygen, and then cordyceps increases the amount of blood flow. So those are two factors that may be helpful, but again, I don't know of any specific studies.
And those, I mean, they've been used in just ancient Chinese medicine for thousands and thousands
of
years.
Yes.
Yes. Did you find the mushroom that was good for diabetics?
No, I'm still typing with one hand.
Sorry. I'll give you
time. I need four arms and two brains at the same time. But
isn't there a mushroom that could help you grow that? Now, what about the safety of mushrooms? And how do you know the ones that are the magic mushrooms and the medicinal ones? How do you tell the difference?
Well, it's like anything else. You know, I make an analogy. It's like seeing faces of friends, you know, or faces of people you don't like. You have to memorize them. There's no sort of one rule. You know,
do you have an app that does that or something that can help?
No, apps are not dependable. And you cannot be colorblind. Colorblind people are a big disadvantage because color of mushrooms are essential for mushroom identification.
The toxic ones, at what color do those tend to be?
All colors of the rainbow, and as are the edibles as well as the medicinals. So, you know, I recommend that people join a mycological society, and there's a nonprofit mycological society called the North American Mycological Association, NAMA.
Okay.
And their website is namyco.org. That's NAMYCO, namyco.org. And they're the national organization that has on their website all the local organizations, many of which are close to most listeners here, and they can join that mushroom club. And then this is a really, really interesting eclectic group of people, from truck drivers to medical researchers, all come together for their love of mushrooms. And you can learn identification techniques, cultivation techniques. It's really fun because when you go out into the woods, it's like an adult Easter egg hunt. In fact, that's kind of what it is, because you have this eureka experience when you find them. You have this endorphin rush. It's very addictive in a healthy way. And some of I've met many elderly people who state that their favorite memories were when they were as a child with their parents going out and hunting mushrooms, because they're away from the business. They have the attention. The kids are smaller, so they're closer to the ground. They can find
mm-hmm.
more mushrooms, and they're rewarded with the passion of their parents' affection. So, it's.
And you can take pictures of them, and you can also compare those to pictures online and see what, because there's enough research.
Again, you should not depend upon pictures. You should be associated with an expert. We have very, very good training classes. We have methodologies for this. What interesting factoid, not a single member of the North American Mycological Association parent organization and all of their clubs, not a single member has ever died from mushroom poisoning.
Wow, that is a good fact to know. All right, we're going to take another quick break, Paul, and you can look up the diabetic mushroom while we're at it and take a little bit of a break, and we'll come back with questions from the listeners. We'll be right back. This is Lisa Garr. You're listening to Coast to Coast AM.